Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with bonkers.ie, Ireland's favourite comparison and switching website. Visit bonkers.ie today and start saving on your household bills.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Maybe some of our trucker friends can have a look at that photograph I just tweeted of the truck that came into the UK via Holyhead, upon which 39 people have now been found dead. Maybe they can tell us what type of truck it is, or is it unusual in itself? Because I presume at this the next stage is for the Gardaí to try and find out the movements of the truck, how it got into Ireland and how it got out of Ireland. And as I say, the theory is that it came from France, and there's a direct route now from France to Dublin City Port, Dublin, because they know it went from. They know it landed in Holyhead, and as far as I know, the only ships that land in Holyhead are from Ireland at this stage. Let me bring in Gene Harrington. Gene, good afternoon. 51551. We were talking yesterday about that horrific robbery up off Thomas Street near Rialto at gunpoint. A number of tourists held up with what everyone thinks. I don't know how people would know the difference, unfortunately, but the man wasn't holding a banana, he was holding a gun, which he was, if it's regardless of whether people think it was a dummy gun or a real gun, he was using it as a real gun, and he was threatening people as if it was a real gun. And I heard someone say this morning, well, they were tourists, they mightn't have understood that in Dublin, if you're going to be robbed, no one will put out a gun. Well, how do we know? That's nonsense. How do we know that? They've got more. They seem to get hysterical, it was said, because they were tourists and didn't realise no one would pull a gun on you to mug you. Well, come and hear some of the stories we're hearing from Dublin City Centre. Now, Jean, it was your son. Where did this happen?
It happened in Dublin East, just outside the Incognito Games Rooms there on Bridge Street, I think it's called.
What's the name of the street? Sorry, very bad line. What's the name of the street?
Bridgefoot Street, sorry.
Bridgefoot Street, which is up off Thomas Street, which is near Guinness Storehouse again. What happened?
Well, my son was out with his friend for their 13th birthday. It was his friend's birthday. And so there were four children and an adult. And as they were leaving the games room, there were a bunch of youth basically lighting fireworks and aiming them at the kids coming out.
Wow.
And so my group, I wasn't actually there. He was with a friend and a friend's mother. But they aimed the fireworks at the kids and they spotted them. So my gang ran back inside. But unfortunately, the fireworks hit my son and another child. But my son was, you know, badly enough burnt on his arm and his jumper. So his hoodie caught fire. And my son said that his instinct just kicked in and he put it out really quickly.
His jacket caught fire.
Yeah, his hoodie, yeah. So it's burnt in like three places. And his t-shirt was also burnt underneath the hoodie. So it went quite through, it went right through his hoodie, which would have been like a thick, you know, winter.
And when did this happen, Jean?
On Friday. Last Friday.
Because we got reports in the middle of last week that in Clanbrassil Street in Dublin, that bangers were being lit and thrown at cyclists, one of whom their jacket ignited. Now, you're telling me your son's hoodie ignited with whatever was thrown at him. And how did he escape, or did he escape injury?
They ran back into the games room. So they were literally at the entrance of these rooms. So they ran back into the building and stayed there until the gang went away. But as I said, he was, you know, badly enough burnt in a small-ish section on his arm, but his forearm was burnt the most. Now, he was lucky, as I said, because it could have landed anywhere else on his body.
Okay, by the way, the Gardaí have been on to read the incident. You'll see it in most of the newspapers today. And you would have seen it on the news, the video that we received yesterday. The Gardaí say that it's gone now off my screen, unfortunately. The Garda press office say, read a gun incident at Long Place. No one is arrested. No one's been charged. Investigations are continuing. Any information, go to the Gardaí. Okay, did your son report it to the Gardaí, Jean?
Yeah, so there was no Garda presence on the night, and the mother reported it, and nobody came, and then it was followed up with an email to Kevinsley Guard Station, and I haven't heard anything since either.
Okay, now, if it's Bridgefoot Street, it's near the Oliver Bond flats, as they're called. And as I was saying yesterday, I drove by there last week in broad daylight. It was early-ish in the morning, and it was like a supermarket for drugs. They were selling drugs through the railings. The sellers were on one side and the buyers were on the other, as if they had hatches in a post office doling out the drugs. Let me bring in Martin O'Malley. Martin, what happened? Oh, your point, please. Sorry, you did intervene. Go ahead.
Hey, Martin.
Martin O'Malley, yes, please.
Yes, I intervened because these tourists were looking at their map up around Christchurch.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a real, you know, red rag to a bull to say, rob me. And I say to people, if you're going to open your map, step into a doorway or something.
But hang
Don't
on,
Martin. Out in the street.
Well, Martin, I know, I appreciate you calling and I appreciate the story you're about to tell. But for someone, it's not you, but I think a lot of people believe this, to take out a map in Dublin is like red rag to a bull in terms of thievery and mugging. But why should it be?
Exactly. Why should it be? But these are the facts of life.
Okay.
And, you know, these people who are stealing don't care. As simple as that. Whether you're foreign, whether you're a child, whether you're a woman.
OK, you prevented a mugging. What happened?
To go into detail... The guy snatched. He tried to snatch the camera from around the guy's neck.
Okay.
And he was dragging him along. He was of Oriental extraction, the victim. And I stepped in and I strongly abused the thief until his nose bled. But that's neither here nor there. And he legged it.
Okay.
But the Oriental gentleman held onto his camera.
And when did this happen, Mark?
Earlier this year.
Okay. Whereabouts again? Around Christchurch, whole part of the city is probably now between Christchurch, St. Patrick's, the Dublinia experience, all the distillery tour up around the Liberties from Teeling's to Dublin Whiskey to Roe & Co. to Pierce Walsh, and then to the Guinness Storehouse,
the biggest. Dublin.
Yeah,
it's the heart of Dublin.
Stay there for a sec, Martin. Alex Thorpe, where did you have a gun pointed at you, Alex?
It was on Ross Road near Christchurch Cathedral, or between St. Patrick's Cathedral and Christchurch Cathedral.
And what happened?
I was walking home about 1 a.m. in the morning after being at a friend's place. He used to live on Cork Street.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was coming towards me when I turned onto Ross Road, and I was walking towards him. He was on the other side of the road. He kind of crossed the road, came up towards me, pulled the gun and pointed straight to my face. Did like this kind of evil smirk and then started walking backwards. And I was like, is everything okay? And then he just kind of put the gun away and then just legged it off. Like, it was just weird.
And when you say he pointed a gun at you?
Yeah.
Well, was he trying to get money or your phone or?
No, nothing. It just seemed like he was trying to scare me or something, or intimidate me. Like, he didn't even say anything at all. Like, he just pulled the gun out, pointed it straight at my face. I said, is everything okay? And then he just kind of like smiled evilly and then just legged it.
Okay.
It was all over like so quickly.
And Alex, this point again, you thought it was a gun. He was using it as a gun, so it is a gun.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, it was a gun, boy.
Anything like that ever happened to you before?
Not in this country. I've had a few crazy violent attacks in Dublin and I've seen lots of craziness happened in the Dublin city centre. Like, I had a road rage attack from one person once that just went crazy at the taxi man who was cut him off that I was a passenger with. And then Dolphin Bar, I had a bunch of kids I stopped throwing beer bottles at me from across the canal. But that's the joys of living in this country, I guess.
Okay, well, joy is on the line. Thanks indeed, Alex Top 51551. Joy, good afternoon.
Hiya, Joe. How's it going?
You're again another awful line, unfortunately. You're living in the area of the gun attack, I'm told.
I've been living in the Dublin.
Okay, I'll come back to you in a sec, Joy. Thanks. Stay there, it's not your fault. Marion, good afternoon.
Joe, good afternoon.
What happened?
Again, I went in one Friday, I think, morning into Baldoyle Post Office. I was the first in the door to collect my mother's pension. This is a good few years ago.
Okay.
But this young fella came out of nowhere. He wasn't queuing up outside to wait to go in or anything. And he just, big tall young fella, very smelly, and just grabbed me around the neck, not tightly now, but mm-hmm. held this gun to my temple.
Right.
Now, I could just feel the cold metal. I saw it was a gun because I saw it in his hand, but he had a scarf up over his face. But I dropped my handbag and I nearly passed out. The funny thing was, I had a lot of cash in my own handbag that morning. But anyway, he wanted money from the postmistress.
So hang on, he was holding you hostage?
He was holding me hostage, yes, for money from the postmistress, who is now deceased in Baldoyle Post Office.
And what did he shout at the postmistress?
Oh, he roared at them to give him some money. And all that was between, well, there was a glass, probably a non-shattered glass between us. But the old postmistress, she said, oh, no, she said, I've no money. And she shouted at him, that's not a real gun anyway. And I thought, Jesus. But anyway, he got, she wasn't going anywhere with him. And he got a fright, I suppose, or he wasn't going to waste any more time. So he let me go and he ran out, just disappeared out. But I didn't know until the next. Now, they did catch him because there was a police cycle on in the area somewhere, St. Anne's or somewhere like that. And there was two or three police cars on the spot, like within 5 minutes.
No, great.
So
yeah,
that was good. But they caught him. He was in. He went into an old house. That's the other side of the Mall area. But I didn't know till the next morning. I had to go up to the station when I'd calmed down a bit to make a statement. Yeah. And a guard I knew at the time was there. And he said, there's the gun. He said, it's not real. But it had a very long, like an old-fashioned handgun, it was like.
And the sensation on your temple?
Frightened the shit out of you, Joe.
Oh,
sorry.
Yeah.
I mean, it all happened so fast.
Okay.
And he just grabbed me around the neck and held me and put this. And he said, she gets it if I don't get some money.
Good God.
Yeah.
And did the postmistress hand over any cash?
No, she said from the word go, she wasn't giving him anything. She was kind of dismissing him as if he was a 12-year-old with a stick in his hand. She didn't give a sugar whether I was shot or not. But no, she gave him nothing, and he just got fed up. But if he had happened to take my handbag, which he didn't, I dropped it with fright. I had a couple of hundred quid in it that morning. Mm-hmm. Just wouldn't be what I'd normally have. But anyway, I went up to the Holt's Garda station the next morning and made a statement and saw the gun and handled it. It was in a plastic bag and that kind of thing. And for my trauma, I got 100 quid from Unpost at the time.
Okay.
As a whatever.
A gesture.
A gesture, yeah.
I'd say you won't forget you won't forget the sensation of that gun at your temple.
Oh, no. And for a long time after, I didn't go down to that post office until kind of later in the day when there was people in and out. Now, that probably doesn't make a lot of sense because there might have been more money. But, I mean, on pension day, there's always cash flow and it's hard cash, you know?
Yeah, I know that.
Yeah.
Okay,
so that was my experience.
Okay, Marion, thanks indeed. I want to go back now. Thanks, Marion.
Thank you.
Marion and Baldoyle. Joy, good afternoon again. Are you calling from the Rialto stroke Thomas Street, that Dublin 8 area?
This is Joy here, yes?
Yes, Joy, go ahead.
Yeah, hi. How are you doing, Joy? Thanks very much for the opportunity to talk.
Okay.
Yeah, I live in the Dublin 8 area and I live just off the area that where that crime happened. And I'd like to just tell you a little bit about the experiences of living here and the experiences of dealing with the police and the policing forum and what we need. And I just want to preface it by saying, you know, we don't want to feed into a narrative that this is gangland and it's full of crime and people shouldn't come up here. The best people I've ever met live and are born and bred and come from this area. And the majority of people in this area just want to live peacefully, rear their children and live in peace and prosperity. However, there are a lot of challenges in this area and the core of the problem comes from poverty and neglect by successive governments in all areas, you know.
Yeah, okay.
And the people
do you think that justifies, there was poverty when I was growing up in Ballyferm, there was poverty everywhere. I'm not saying it's an issue to be dealt with, but don't, please Joy, my patience,
no, I hear you.
My patience isn't available today for describing those feckers yesterday that terrorised that poor woman and those two men with a gun.
You
know, he's not suffering from poverty. He ain't.
There is a problem of poverty here and there's also...
Poverty doesn't justify crime.
Well, you know...
It doesn't. I'm sorry, it doesn't justify crime.
Okay, well, let me just say, Joe, you know, there are there is a lot of crime in this area, but it's very out on the streets and you see it. Mm-hmm. I'm from a different part of town and it's all hidden away in nice, you know, country clubs and one thing and another. So what went on here the other day should not have happened, and there should be consequences for the people who did that. And our challenge here is not only is there crime within the community, there's crime in every community, but we have people, as you said, it's like a supermarket for drugs, and we have people coming in from all areas and also committing crimes in this area. And our challenge here is getting, you know, we do go to the guards. I think they're trying to do their best. We had the superintendent in talking to us on Wednesday about various plans he has. But the bottom line of it is we don't have police on the streets. They're not resourced. You know, the community is in crisis here. You know, one of your previous speakers said it's the heart of Dublin. It is. And the heart is in cardiac arrest. This community is facing an extinction in a lot of ways. You know, 3-1 transient people coming into the area, whether they're tourists, hotels, whether the mass of people we have in various wet houses and dry houses and disease units. There's talk about putting an injecting centre here. You know, this area has the highest level of these type, places in the whole of the country. And much as those people are welcomed as everybody is into the community and they're fed and they're housed and the community can respect them, you know, conniptions in every other area, if there's even like putting two beds in the likes of them in 4 or 6. I'm originally from the Dublin 6 area, Joe, and if what happens here on an hourly basis, on a minute-by-minute basis, was to occur in the likes of Donnybrook, Clonskey, Ranelagh, Rathfarnham, you name it, wherever, the area would be cordoned off and there'd be armed police. Okay? Now, we had 2 years, or 3 years, of armed police down here after the incident in the Regency Hotel. And they'd be, you know, doing spot checks on cars and they're getting information and they're doing whatever they're doing. Meanwhile, around the corner, the same old behaviour is going on. Down the lanes, you know, in the doorways, you know, whatever. And nobody, there's nobody on the streets, there's no guards. We find it very hard to get them to come out.
Why is that, Joy? Why?
Well, we're told, now, you know, we're told, you know, they don't have enough staff, they don't have enough cars, they're under pressure, they have to triage crime, so if there's a murder, they can't go out because somebody's been beaten up or whatever else. But the bottom line of it is, you know, the guards at the end of the day are civil servants, they're under the Minister for Justice, you know, they're under the current government, and we've had successive middle-of-the-road, right-wing governments. I'm not allied to any political party, but there's no accountability of these people to the people in the area who they're supposed to
serve. I know. Characterise governments whatever way you like, Joy, but these are governments elected by the people of Ireland, which have included the Labour Party and the Greens in the last few years. So we haven't had successive right-wing governments. If the governments are elected by the people...
Okay, well, I'll tell you about now the TDs. We have the... you know, quarterly policing forums here. He's bothered to stop, or the county council is bothered to turn to that.
Okay, your line is just so bad, Joy. Joy, we'll try and I don't want to lose you, but we'll have to get a better line. PJ Woods, PJ, Daylight in Dublin, you're a driver. Go ahead, PJ.
How are you, Joe? Yeah. That's it. Joy, excuse me, I do see this on a regular basis. I'm a chauffeur, Joe, in the corporate sector mostly. But I do see this when I'm in the city, you know, openly drug dealing going on in broad daylight. Mm-hmm. They seem to have a free run. There's no hassles. They have...
Where open drug dealing?
Okay, the bottom of...
Okay.
Christchurch.
Go ahead. Sorry, you're gone, PJ. Anne Wallace in Limerick. Anne...
Hello.
How are you? What happened?
Well, I was talking to the researcher about something that happened to me about 20 years back, but I think that's a bit too far back now.
Well, tell us the story anyway. Tell us, because people are what people were talking about earlier was just the effect it has on somebody to be held up at gunpoint or whatever. So you can tell us that, Anne, please.
Yes. Exactly.
Yeah.
I used to work in the bell table, and it was during pantomime time.
Yeah.
And this, the pantomime had started, and next, this two fellas, and there was one stayed at the door,
okay.
charged in, you know, masks on, gloves on, all in black. It was like as if they were newly bought now, but they were sturdy fellas, guys that were working out, you know, and just that's the impression I got. But I was the person in charge of the cash. Everybody else then, that's right, people that were shown people to their seats, they were ushered to the back of the foyer, mm-hmm. and they were told to lie down. But, you know, they had this thing that I thought was the leg of a chair. And
yeah.
they came over to me, and they were pointing it at me, and they were roaring. They were roaring. They roar so loud, you can't. Can't understand them, but they wanted money, and
okay.
I just said, "No, feck off for that." I thought it was part of the pantomime because at times,
yeah,
you know,
okay.
they come in on the back and all that type of caper. But anyway, it was only when I saw other people say taking it very seriously, and they were looking at me with their eyes standing, you know. But this guy, anyway, jumped the counter. He put his hand on the counter and jumped over. I'm not joking you. I mean, this countertop was very high. And he stood in front of me.
Right.
And he just kept screaming and screaming. And the other fella had a gun. But the gun, it seems, it was a sawn-off shotgun.
Oh, God.
Which is distance, okay. You know. But it took a few minutes for the penny to drop that this was serious, that it was a serious gun. But anyway, I showed him. I had the money all checked and it was mm-hmm. in envelopes and I just said, there it is. But they were screaming for more. They were screaming, this is a danger. They don't realise they have it all, you know. And yeah. they were going, where's this? Where's this? And I didn't know what he was saying. And I had been asked, the manager of the Belgium, to give me some type of alarm. There's a mm-hmm. friend of mine who worked down the road in a little small shop, and somebody had assaulted her with a knife. Was it the previous week? And she was really very upset, and she, of course she left her job immediately. But so that made me a little bit.
And were they ever apprehended, Anne?
Never,
never.
Never. But he was screaming so hard. Bloody
yeah.
hell.
I hope that's a good watchdog.
He was screaming so hard anyway that I went over. I kind of went towards him. I leaned towards him and pressed the button under my finger, which was under this the edge. And the smoke alarm went off. And the fella at the door then said, oh, that effing bitch is after setting off the alarm. I'm going to blow your effing head off.
Oh, my God.
And he ran over at me and he put this to my temple, you know, the soft part of the side.
Yeah.
You put it there. And all I did was I closed my eyes, and of course, my hands were up for some reason. And I had my eyes closed, and all I visualized was the wall against me was full of, like, broken tomatoes. I had that in my mind.
The blood, the blood.
Because I thought it was gone. And I wasn't even really. I was gone beyond fear.
Yeah, okay.
But the director of the panto, they went off anyway. They didn't shoot me. They took the money and went. There was a car.
But it comes back to this point that was made earlier on a different station.
Yeah.
Oh well, if she was from Dublin, she would have known it wasn't a real gun because couriers don't carry real guns in Dublin. That's news to me. But because she was a tourist, she probably thought it was a real gun. Therefore, but if you ever find out was it a real or a replica gun?
Well, I don't know. Just people were saying, oh, it was a sawn-off shotgun. The guards were there in minutes. And maybe the guard said it. And the TV was there, and there was a reporter there. You know, and they were all in on top of me. I was just sitting there like a fool, you know? You know, I mean, I was sort of still not, you know.
You brilliantly described the fear. Stay there, Anne. I want to go to Nancy about Lucan in West Dublin, Lucan Village. Is it Lucan Village in particular, Nancy?
Yes, actually, it's just about that. And was in relation to your segment yesterday.
Yeah.
On what Alice Leahy had to say, and also about what had happened in James's Street. And we find now that a gang of youths have descended upon Lucan Village, and it started a couple of months ago. And since then, they seem to do what they like.
And what are they doing, Nancy, please?
Well, what they are actually doing is that they collect in the village, up to about 15 of them, girls included, and they they're just very intimidating. They make, you know, if you're walking by them, you feel very unsafe and intimidated. They run riot. They run across the streets. They shout. They generally misbehave. And I've had reports, or there have been reports, that that same gang were in Lucan Village on Friday last.
Okay.
And they were kicking cars and basically running riot and in the village.
And then, by the way, Lucan Village is a beautiful village.
It's a gorgeous village,
just on the banks of the River Liffey. But the Garda station isn't too far away, Nancy.
I know, but I mean, the reality is that what can the Garda do?
If somebody is vandalising cars and terrorising staff, surely they can do something. And if they're wearing balaclavas.
Well, the Gardaí apparently arrived and the group dispersed. So they weren't actually caught in the act, so to speak.
By the way, we spoke to a number of retailers in the village. And one said to us, I'd be afraid of my life to speak because of a fear of intimidation.
Well, exactly. This is what the point that I'm trying to make. I mean, it's a group of a gang. It's actually a gang of young youths, and I'd say they're between maybe 14 and 16. And they this has just happened actually over the summer months. For instance, my son was going to the village with his. His window down, the little boy in the back, and one of these young fellows spat at him. And then there were another report of another lady, a grandmother, who was collecting her her grandson and was coming down the steps, and she was abused by, and again similarly spat at by the same group of youths. Now nobody knows where they come from. I mean, something will have to be done about them. It's shocking. It's absolutely shocking. And as you say, people are terrified. They're terrified of them.
And people
I'm actually afraid. I do a lot of walking, as indeed an awful lot of women do. We do an awful lot of walking through the village. And I'm now afraid. I'm afraid. I walk in the Domain. We have an absolutely stunning Lucan Domain and St. Catherine's Park, as we all know, is an absolutely stunning place, beautiful facilities. And people are afraid to walk in these places. They're so afraid and intimidated by the same group of youths. And I'd like to really speak out on behalf of the people of Lucan. We don't want them in our village. We don't want them intimidating our people.
Yeah, but how are they? Like, I'm thinking, and I know people can't intervene and the Gardaí don't advise it, but I'm thinking of that incredible woman yesterday. Who Emma Farr was her name, who did intervene and did chastise it, and she was with her 14-month-old baby and did let them have it verbally, and they ran. But let me bring in Dave. Dave, good afternoon.
Yeah, good afternoon, Joe.
You intervened as well near Oliver Bond Flats. It's not a street.
I did, Joe.
Near the Quays in Dublin. People might know it. It's behind Usher's Island petrol station as you're going up to Euston Station. Go ahead, Dave.
That's correct, Joe. At 10 to 7 one beautiful Saturday evening, Joe, I was driving the bus up along the Quays there. And there was four tourists, two gentlemen, walking ahead of two women.
Okay.
And there was two guys behind the two women.
Right.
So I slowed the bus right down, and I could kind of picture what was going to happen. So within 15 seconds, 20 seconds, the two bags had been snatched off the two women. Okay. So I put the handbrake on the bus. I jumped off. I tackled the two guys. I got one of them against the fence, and they proceeded to throw the two bags at me.
Okay.
So under the front wheel of the bus went the two ladies' handbags with their wallets, purses, passports, and that in them. Just picked them up, handed them back to the women, got back onto the bus, and everybody just standed up and started applauding.
You got a standing ovation.
A standing
room only ovation. But Dave, where did the two women go?
No, they were actually, Joe, they were kind of looking up at John's Lane Church, the back of John's Lane Church, from where they were standing, and they were strolling. They were two sitting ducks for these guys. You know?
Yeah, but like, why are they sitting ducks? Like, they're...
I know that, and you know that, Joe.
That's, I forgot to mention, in terms of a tourist attraction, there's John's Lane Church, a magnificent church, the sculpture, a lot of the sculpture and the altar work done by Páraic Pearse's brother and father. Then you have St. James's Street Church, which is the beginning, a lot of people believe, of the Camino. Then you have St. Catherine's. It's a really historic part. It's probably, in terms of concentration, the single most historic part of the country at this stage. And then you have down onto Wood Quay, which is the original location of Balliol, Clia, Doolin. But anyway, but it's still going on around now, even though there's 99.9%. But it's still going on around Oliver Bond Flats in terms of using it as a spot. I don't know whether it's where they can make a quick getaway through, where the guards can't drive through. But anyway, for some reason. Okay, Dave, thanks indeed. Well done. Where's PJ Woods, also in the driving business? What did you see?
It's similar to Dave there, Joe. I would have had this Sunday morning, pre-end of April, about 10:30 in the morning. I was, after being out on an overnight with friends in the city, I was heading back along the quays there, and just the corner of my eye, I could see a gentleman, a bit of distress. I could hear him shouting, "Stop, stop."
Okay.
And there was a guy on a mountain bike, you know, no balaclava on him, we'd say, had a... You could see him, you know, whatever he's up to doing. He obviously had dipped the man or whatever. Anyway, long story short, he was in touching distance to me while I was driving. So I'm not going to lie to you, Joe. I tried to run him over and I would have suffered the consequences. No problem at all. I missed him by inches, Joe. Inches. Yeah. And he knew. He was looking at me straight through the window. So anyway, it was a one-way system, as you know, there. And I said, right, do I reverse and just chase him up along the quays? Very cute. Yeah,
PJ, were you mad?
No,
don't.
I felt sorry for that old man.
Yeah, but
Joe,
don't knock. God, PJ, please don't. I know it was a.
Yeah, no, it's the only way they're going there, because look at
No, Joe.
I know. Listen, I know where you're going with this. It was just a heated moment, but I would have done it anyway, right? Anyway, listen. What happens is, Joe, these guys don't care because they go into the system, they get free legal aid, they get their drugs, they get whatever they need, and they're back out as quick as that. It's a game to them. So until the laws are changed in Ireland, these are going to keep, they're going to continually to do this. It's getting worse and worse, Joe. As a driver like Dave, we see this on a regular basis. It's not just Dublin, it's all over Ireland. Okay. Major cities, smaller towns, it's everywhere. So Mr. Harris, Drew Harris, has to stand up to the plate here. And it's not just all about gangland. This is at local level. We, you know, we've elderly people here who are afraid of their life to get out of their houses in broad daylight, Joe, because
But in fairness, PJ, even though internationally we're one of the safest countries in the world, I know for the people who were held at gunpoint yesterday, that doesn't butter any parsnips, relatively.
But Joe, honestly, can you, are you telling me now, you know, and anyone else that's listening there, they don't recognise their pictures, a close up of them. You know, surely the guards walking in that jurisdiction have had them in their hands before. you know, the pictures are not too bad now, especially the one in the blue hoodie with the arm or whatever it was.
Well, there's there are pictures in the unpixelated and only put up obscure ones because we were told that's what we had to do. But there are clear images of your man with the gun.
Of course there is, clear. Of course, but people know him, Joe. You know, there's a confidential line there. You know, and that should be used. You know, it's, and as I said again, let's get back to the guards who are street level with this stuff. They deal with this, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. That's the vermin they have to run around with each day, chasing. But, Joe, as I said, it has to start at the top. Minister for Justice, the laws of the land have to be changed in relation to slap on the wrist. You do something like this in America, Joe, you're jailed. 5-10 years. It's as simple as that. South America is the same. I've been to all these countries, and I've seen, I know the way it runs.
Okay. Who had the Lisbon story? Was that you, PJ?
That was myself, yeah. I had that. I was, you're going back to 15 years ago.
Yeah, but I'm trying to make the point that, okay, it's awful when it happens to you, but let's not have people locking themselves in the houses, living in fear. Yeah, but anyway, tell us the Lisbon story.
Yeah. I was away. I'm expired on myself, Joe. So, you know, it came in handy, this particular situation. I went into a bank. I wouldn't use an outdoor ATM ever, and a bit of sound advice for people. Mm-hmm. If they can use the interior, you know, you're cutting off more angles for either assault or robbery. So I was in... inside the door, obviously, I thought it was one guy. It was two when I sussed it out. He's a big fella, 6'2", 6'3", big coloured guy, black coloured, whatever you want to call it. So as I turned around to come out the door, he stood in front of me. And I knew straight away what was going on. And he says, the bit of English he had, he said, can you help me? My friend has a problem with the ATM. So literally they were closing down my space, Joey. A man had come up behind me. But I could see this with my own peripheral village or vision. I could see what was about to happen. So I just grabbed your man, Joe. Before I grabbed him, his hand was going into his bag or his pocket, whatever it was. I knew he was about to take something out. So the way these guys act, Joe, it's an element of surprise. They get so close to you, but still they would have a knife or whatever else, screwdriver or whatever else, or some type of arm. So this is what happens. You know, no one around you knows what's going on. You're not looked in distress. You're just...
Well, I don't know whether anyone watched the video of the two women in the shop. I think it's Alondis in Kentstown in County Meath.
Right.
The way the two of them... It's been widely circulated there on social media, as you say.
Right.
But the two of them come in, they're in their 30s, early 40s, and the two of them are up at the cash register in not an extraordinarily busy shop, but they, in a sleight of hand, operating between the two of them, they've obviously done it before. They robbed the collection box off the counter. You know, in the case of Kentstown, it was for Mead River Rescue, which is an incredible organisation of volunteers. Especially in the River Boyne around Slane, they're fantastic. But they actually planned it.
They've no morals, Joe. They've no morals.
Well, they've some care, system because they walked out nonchalantly with the collection box under their coat.
Yeah, it's a regular occurrence. This is what I'm saying, Joe. Even if they're caught, right, in broad daylight, nothing is done. There's no deterrent here in Ireland. There's none. This is why the youths are dysfunctional at the moment. They don't care. They're actually quoting back to the Garda what they're entitled to. Don't touch me, don't do this, don't do that. So, you know, at the end of the day, Joe, the parents have to step up as well. I mean, this is their kids. You know, where's your kids at 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock at night?
Okay, I know the argument.
Do you know what I mean?
Okay. Okay, PJ, go safely. By the way, I don't know whether there's that many of them in Ireland, but the indoor, what you said, the indoor ATM is the only one you'll ever use.
Yeah, if you can. You know, again, it's just cutting off the element of surprise. You have a better chance inside because there's CCTV. Obviously, they don't want to go in there and be seen. You know, a security guard is in there as well. He's going to be obviously vigilant. That's his job. But, you know, ATMs are they're a landmine, Joe, for anybody, not just for the younger people, but the older generation. You know, I feel sorry for them having to walk up with a back to the world. And who's coming? You can't see nothing from behind.
Okay.
You just can't see it.
Okay, people should be careful anyway. Okay, PJ Woods and Drogheda, go to Míle Maith, 51551 joe@rt.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
Remember, this is a bank holiday weekend coming up. It also means that the clocks go back. We get an extra hour, don't we, on Saturday night stroke Sunday morning, pardon the pun. And we are on this Friday. We are in the Faith Lake House Hotel just outside Waterford City for Funny Friday. Everyone's absolutely and totally welcome. Big, big venue. It's a glorious location. It's a little bit off a bus route, but if you get to Waterford, you'll easily get out to Faith Lake, or if you're driving, there's plenty of parking. But the train will take you to Waterford, the bus will take you to Waterford, and as I say, Faith Lake, you're all welcome as per usual. Loads of giveaways, loads of prizes, and plenty of fun, and God knows we need it. Now, we're talking about the reaction to yesterday's issue on Liveline, when we had a number of witnesses who on Monday evening at 6:14 in the evening, they witnessed two men, one who pulled out a gun and proceeded to steal money and mobile phones off what looks like, as far as we can find out, we think they might have left the country, we don't know, but Italian tourists and their teachers coming from the Guinness storehouse in off James Street in Dublin. The individuals were absolutely terrified with this prospect of this man who was brandishing a gun as a gun. He was brandishing it and using it as a gun and threatening it, threatening them with it as if it was a gun, and it looked like a gun. And we're hearing earlier from other callers who had guns that turned out to be replicas pointed, held to their temple. And the caller, I think it was Marion in Baldoyle, she said she never forget the sensation of that cold barrel at her temple and your man grabbing around the neck, holding a hostage to get money off the postmistress. Jane, good afternoon. I know it's a good few years ago, but you obviously still haven't forgotten a gun incident. What happened?
Oh, well, as I said, it's a long time ago. I was 6 months pregnant at the time, Joe, and we were living out in North County Dublin, quite an isolated area. I had two little boys aged 4 and 5 at the time. My husband was due home from work when four men entered the house with guns and balaclavas. They brought myself and my two sons at gunpoint down to the main bedroom, where they started to unravel chains and adhesive tape to tie us up and gag us. I said, thinking I was going to frighten them off, I said, look, my husband is going to be here in a minute. And they said, we know that, we're waiting for him. My children were terrified. They were clinging to me. There was a panic button in the room, Joe, and I pressed it. The alarm started ringing in the house and outside. And the leader of the gang hit me around the face and head with the butt of his gun, cursing madly. They left. Nothing was taken. It had a terrible, terrible effect on me and my children, Joe. For 15 years, I had post-traumatic stress disorder. I couldn't talk about it for 15 years, but I did eventually have treatment and retrograde therapy, and it was a help. But really, the point I was making is that having a gun pointed at you, the criminals don't realise the trauma they are causing that person. And my four-year-old boy at that time, after the raid, insisted that we get him a black balaclava, black clothes. He would only wear black. He wanted a big black gun. I eventually gave in and I got them for him. And he, for a long time, would wear nothing else. And I was told afterwards that it was actually the right thing to do because he was kind of playing out his anxiety by wearing the balaclava and carrying a gun.
And how many, Jane, how many men broke into your house, do you know?
Four.
Okay. And there's no justification whatsoever. Never could be. But what were they hoping to do with your husband, who they said were waiting on him as they held you captive?
Really, there was a lot of money in the house, Joe, and actually, one of the first things they said to me was, have you got a safe in the house?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, yes, there is a safe, but I don't know the combination. And I genuinely didn't, Joe. I never used that safe. And I don't really want to give too much detail about what sort of money was there, but there was a lot of money in the house at the time.
And would they have known it was a cash house, your business or your husband was a cash business?
Obviously, some kind of, yes, it wouldn't have been public knowledge. But obviously they found out somehow or other.
Okay, so they stole it, but the post-traumatic... And what was it like going back to the house where this happened after the Gardaí had done their work?
Now, we went on to live in the house, Joe. I couldn't sleep in that bedroom anymore. We built on another bedroom at the back of the house. But I had nightmares. And to this day, I still have nightmares. And... my husband died 2 years ago. I was just so nervous in the house that I've now moved into a first floor apartment in town.
Okay.
So that I don't have the worry of somebody breaking in the back door or the hall door or in through a window. So here we are 36 later and I've still been affected by it.
And Jane, were any of those four men ever apprehended and convicted?
No, there were no fingerprints, Joe. They were wearing gloves, but the police had a very good idea of who they were, but there was no physical evidence. They did drop the chains and the adhesive tape when they left, but there were no fingerprints on them.
Wow. But as I say, you so vividly... illustrate the effect that it can have on you for the trauma that it can have on you for
and
in terms of you know the way people say try and talk to them if they're holding it try and say how have you children yourself or did any conversation take place or could it take place
very little show other than asking me where the safe was or did we have a safe. They didn't ask me anything. My only conversation with them was to say, look, my husband's due home any minute, thinking it was going to frighten them off.
Yeah.
And that was when they said, we're waiting for him.
And when did they withdraw?
After the alarm went off and I pressed the panic button in the bedroom. And the leader of the gang, as I said, beat me over the head and the face with the gun, with the butt of the gun, and they left. And I was so scared. With the two boys, I went in and I locked the door in the bathroom, and just to kind of feel safe.
Mm.
And one of them came back and tried to open the bathroom door. I thought he was going to actually shoot through the door to open it. I think maybe they were looking for the keys of my car. Anyway, they eventually left. But the awful thing was, we weren't long in that house. And in those days, you couldn't get a phone immediately. We were several years waiting for a telephone. And we had no phone. So... I then remembered that my husband had said that he was meeting somebody after work that day, that he wouldn't be home for about another hour. I had forgotten that, actually. So I had to go out get into my car with my boys and go to the nearest house to
get help.
Where I knew there was a phone.
Jane, you vividly described your trauma. How are the children that were
They held? Remember it. In minute detail, to this day, they remember it.
Okay.
Now, you know, they're both age, 40 and 42 now, but they remember it vividly to this day.
Okay, thanks, Jane, for that insight into the trauma that people suffer after being held at gunpoint. Thanks, Jane. 51551 joe@rte.ie.
Joe Duffy.
to Joe on 1850-715-815.
I'm just taking my jaw up off the desk here after reading Ed Rice's story. Ed, tell us what happened.
Hi, Joe. I feel so flippant after that last...
No, you're not flippant. Tell us.
Caller, yeah, God help her, the trauma.
Yeah, absolutely,
but, I was living for kind of 4 years on Fingal Street, which is just off Cork Street there, you might know it.
Yeah.
And one night I came home after a night out, so I'd had a few, and I'd lived in Cape Town before, so I had a 7-iron by the bed in case, you know, people broke in. I'd had a few incidents in the past, and the memory hadn't left me. And so there was this noise in the kitchen, and I'm only telling you this because the second guy in that video looks very similar. The gait on him and the way he's kind of holding himself looks similar to the guy who came into my house. He was in the kitchen.
Okay.
I could hear rattling there, and I got very nervous. All the Cape Town memories came back. So I walked out with a 7-iron golf club and started yelling at him. And he was just staring at me, threatening me.
What was he doing in the kitchen?
Well, that was the thing. He had taken all the money out of a jar that I had on the table, the kind of 20s and 10-cent pieces and that. But he was making toast, which kind of threw me a bit because I could see the toaster doesn't pop up itself. It's one of those broken ones, so the smoke was starting to come out. But he was threatening me with a gun in his pocket, which...
So he'd taken out a slice pan or a batch loaf or whatever.
Well, I'd come back from a night out, so I'd kind of left a few things on the counter there. But he... and I had a bit of Dutch courage on me, obviously, as well. But he'd made himself some food, and he'd clearly kind of been in the fridge too. He'd pulled out a few things, but then he started really screaming at me and saying, "I'll kill you and I'll kill your brother." How he knew I had a brother, I don't know. But anyway, he was doing all this and getting really aggressive, and then suddenly he just turned and bolted for the door, and I was chasing after him with the 7-iron to get him out. And I went back to bed and sat there for about 20 minutes, kind of nervous,
shaking,
that way, and thinking, God, you know, also the kitchen was full of smoke because of the toast, which was added to the drama. But then I said, I realized, how did he get in? Like, what? And I realized I'd left the key in the door. So I went back out to the door to take the key in, panicking. And there he was, still standing there, absolutely off his head. But now he was like a vulnerable little child. He really didn't know where he was. And so he still had my money, money in his hand, all the coins. So I flagged down a taxi and I said, look, pay for a taxi home with that, still pointing the 7-iron at him, and kind of tried to shove him into the taxi, and the taxi wasn't happy about this. And then he just suddenly bolted and ran for this kind of regeneration area behind Fingal Street. I'm not sure, I forget the name of the flats, but he ran towards that and towards the wall. But it was only when I saw the video I thought, that it seems like he looks like the other guy, not the guy with the gun.
It's 3 years ago, but anyway. Okay, Ed, by the way, how were you after you chased a man with the 7-iron or whatever?
I was kind of proud of myself in a funny way that I didn't actually hit him, but I empathise with that guy who nearly crashed into the taxi driver.
Yeah, you'll end up the worse off of that.
Absolutely, in the moment you're just, you know, your instinct is him or me.
Fight or flight. Okay, that's Ed Rice and Limerick talking about an episode in Dublin 3 years ago, 51551.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
And Annie is going to tell us about the incidents on the Lewis quickly. Annie, thanks indeed. Go ahead.
Okay, Joe, I would travel on the news 3 or 4 times a week every day in the red line going into town, and nearly every time when you go on, there's some kind of an incident happens.
Drug addicts,
and people with, you know, drain problems and all that kind of thing. But I think the Lewis is a great service, but I think people are really sick of the carry-on goes on it now.
Well, what's the most recent incident you saw on the Lewis?
Last week there was 2 guys got on there, and one of them was now totally out of his tree, and they started to have a fight between each other there. Yeah. One of them accused the other one of taking money from him and that.
Could you talk to the driver, for example?
No, they were standing directly behind where the driver was.
Yeah, but the driver,
they started to shout, and one of them was looking for a knife. And people just got up out of their seats and move away, kind of. Do you know what I mean? I know you're not going to get involved with something like that, but it's just so ongoing, like, and there was no security. Didn't come across security, and we got to Houston, you know.
Okay, Annie, thanks indeed. Unfortunately, it's a familiar story. Dave White. Dave, back to this tragedy that we began with. 39,
how are you doing, Joe?
39 people have been found dead in the back of a refrigerated trailer, whether it was operating or not, we don't know, that entered the UK via Holyhead, so we presume it came from Dublin. You're a truck driver. Where did you? By the way, people are saying I should know it. It's a Thermo King refrigerated unit with a Scania cab or whatever. Go ahead, Dave.
A Scania tractor unit, a refrigerated trailer.
Okay.
Joe, just because this truck was registered as entering the UK there in Holyhead doesn't necessarily say that it was carrying this fridge or trailer. Large hauliers there would have several amount of trailers, so they would actually swap over.
Okay,
you know, if a driver runs out of sleeping hours and that. So I'd say a lot of people are taking this the wrong way. I've never heard of an immigrant going from Dublin to UK or the continent. It was always the other way around. So I would definitely say that these come in at Calais or somewhere. And it's very hard to understand how 39 people weren't affected in a trailer.
It's horrific. And they're dead. But Dave, do you do the Calais route? And
No, I haven't been on the continent for 5 years, Joe. I gave it up. It's just like Sarah said, it was just got a waste. I'm in Dublin here with four trucks in Ireland. In Ireland.
Yeah, but have you ever had immigrants?
I've had a few problems. Once I had an immigrant tied to the axle of the fridge for 45 minutes, and it was only from cars flashing at me that I pulled in and found that here was a lad tied to the axle. I'd brought him about 30 miles down the road.
Wow.
So these things happen, Joe, and we're allowed to pull in at places in Calais, Dunkirk, you know, to check our load to see are we carrying immigrants. So, you know, there's a lot of...
So that chap was strapped to your... Well, probably hanging on for dear life.
He was strapped. No, one of his friends probably tied him to it so he wouldn't fall off.
Wow.
But that was a regular thing.
And how did you spot him, by the way, briefly?
I didn't. There was a couple of cars flashing at me along the corridor, we call it.
It's a tragedy. You know? More information, I presume, throughout today. Thanks indeed, Dave White. Angus McInerney produced, and remember, on Friday we're in the Faith Lake House Hotel in Waterford for Funny Friday, and Ray Darcy is next.